Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Ellie McKay, it is fantastic to have you on the EPP podcast today. How are you?
Oh, thanks for having me, Frank. I'm phenomenal, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for giving up some of your time. I know we are due to see each other on our mastermind. For those of you that don't know, Ellie and I share a mastermind next week, but I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, Ellie. For those of you that don't know, Ellie and I have just recorded an interview for Ellie's podcast. You can check it out, actually. It's the Power of Property on a Mission podcast. And it was really funny because Ellie asked me about four questions, and those of you that are familiar with the podcast know I like to talk, and that was about it, Ellie, wasn't it? Four questions and a whole hour of Frank talking.
It was a brilliant interview, but I need to get you back. I need to pick those brains a little bit more, Frank,
because you're welcome to do so.
Although so I give just for a bit of context, I gave Frank a worthy introduction that he deserves, and he went straight on to tell my listeners that he can't even remember his own birthday. So
the reason I mention it though, guys, is because Ellie did a really good job of eliciting my journey into EPP, probably far better than I've done, Ellie, just so you know. Like, I said stuff I've never said before in public, I don't think. So for those of you that are thinking you'd like to get to know me a bit better, I can thoroughly recommend you going and checking out that episode. I'm not sure when it'll go live, but we'll update the show notes when it does go live. But yeah, that's Ellie's podcast, The Power of Property and On a Mission. But this hour, Ellie, is not about me. It's about you. Now, you don't know our podcast that well, I doubt, although you've done tons of research for my interview. I feel woefully unprepared, just so you know, for my interview. I do nowhere near as much research. She was saying, so in 2007, Frank, you did this and this. I was thinking, yeah, I did. How do you know? but the reason I've brought you on, Ellie, is because usually the EPP podcast is one of two things. So usually we'll have me interviewing a franchisee or a power team member, so a professional in their property industry, so a lawyer, an architect, etc. But more often than not, it's a franchisee who is at a specific stage of their journey or has done a specific deal, and we really go into depth about their journey. You, however, are definitely someone I look up to in property. You've had a phenomenal journey, and I'll say this without trying to sell to you, you would be brilliant in EPP.
Never miss an opportunity, Frank.
Never. Always be selling, Ellie. Always be selling. In fact, do you want to go live overseas at all? Because we've got some country opportunities for you, as our listeners will know. But no, the reason I wanted you to come on the podcast is you've had a really successful journey into property. Over a relatively short period of time, you've achieved some amazing things. And I'd love you to describe where you've got to over what period of time for the listeners, because I was blown away when I found this out from yourself and your husband. You've not done it through EPP, and that's what I'm really interested in. I think you've followed a lot of what we teach in EPP, but you've done it through a good friend of mine, Paul. So tell us, Ellie, where did it all start?
Well, yeah, what a lot of people don't know, Frank, is he did actually start back in 2006 when my husband, Mark, who you also know from Mastermind, and I, we were in our early 20s. And I'd previously been in high-performance jobs. At one point, I was responsible for over 100 staff, but through a set of circumstances and a bit of victim mentality on my part, truth be told, I was in a sort of a very generic sort of 9-to-5. Mark was an electrician by trade. He'd not long finished his apprenticeship, and he was working for the company that he'd completed his training with. But we knew that there was more to life, and we knew that we were capable of more. We just didn't know what or how to go about it. So we did what any self-respecting budding entrepreneurs do, and we Googled get rich quick. And that's a true story, by the way.
Seriously, so, you Googled get rich quick. That's hilarious.
We did. I mean, what can possibly go wrong with this story? What can possibly go wrong? we allowed ourselves to be sold the dream. We bought an off-plan development, we bought it for £125,000, which for where we were at, you know, that time in our life was no insignificant amount of money. But this property was going to be worth £195,000 when it was complete, and you know, it was an absolute no-brainer. And this was back in the day where you could buy properties and refinance them in the same day, which, you know, would have just been a phenomenal time to do property, to be fair. But of course, these things never quite go to plan. The development was flooded, and a build that should have been done within 18 months took best part of 4 years, which took a smack bang in the middle of the global recession. So the property that was meant to have been worth 195 was suddenly worth 60. And it was a complete disaster from start to finish. I think at one point we had to come up with a deficit. We had to come up with like 45 grand and we had like 6 weeks to do it. And I was earning about 22 grand a year at the time. So yeah, it massively took its toll on my mental health. But that being said, it's amazing what you can achieve when your back's against the wall. And if I'm honest, I can't remember how we did it, but we did it by the skin of our teeth. And we tried to walk away. We put in quite a large deposit. We tried to walk away from it, but they had us stitched up like kippers. Our due diligence hadn't been on point. I don't think I'd even heard the words due diligence. our solicitor wasn't even a particularly specialist in conveyancing. It was, when you look back, the gaps in what we were doing were crazy. So I became so risk averse after that. I was more than happy to retreat to the comfort and security of a 9-to-5 and know exactly what I was going to get paid, when I was going to get paid. And, you know, I wasn't one of these sort of young entrepreneurial kids that was out hustling and selling things from age 5. That wasn't me. I just was your stereotypical employee. And it wasn't really until years later when I was seeing Mark getting up like on a Monday morning when my alarm would go off and I'd just think, oh, for God's sake, you know, here we go again. Mark would just have that spring in his step. And by this point, he'd set up his own electrical business and he was just like a different person. And I couldn't understand on an evening, this was long before we had children, I couldn't understand in an evening why, like, he was getting the laptop out and I'm like, but you're missing the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills or whatever crap I was watching on the telly. And I couldn't understand. I'm like, but you don't have an embossed, nobody's making you get your laptop out. It genuinely was an alien concept for me. I'll not go into all the details, but I was really struggling with anxiety and depression for quite a lot of years. And although back in my late teens, early 20s, I had been what I would class as a high performance person, those days were long gone. You know, I didn't have the best lifestyle. I used to have panic attacks quite a lot, and I wasn't really in a great place. So we narrowly escaped bankruptcy in 2016 with our electrical company. A big national construction company went over, and it literally came down to the wire whether or not we were going to be able to keep trading. And whilst we hung in there, it really screwed us financially.
How much did they take you for, Ellie, the company that went under?
I think it was about 75 grand, Frank. But for where we were at the minute, at that point, you know, that was make or break stuff. And
it's so common,
you know, obviously, your name of your company is Ethical Property Partners. One of the things, and actually, I didn't know this until years afterwards, but the two Marks, your business partners, Mark Frayne and Mark Mackay, they knew that it was very unlikely that we were going to get paid from this company. The writing was kind of on the wall. But they made sure that they completed that project and fulfilled their contractual obligations, knowing that they weren't going to get paid themselves. And at that point, we had 18 staff working for us, and they took it upon themselves to go and get a bank loan to make sure that each and every one of those guys was actually paid. Was a decision that we knew could potentially cost us our business. And that's what they did. So we were took to the cleaners for 75 grand, and I think there was another 40-odd grand on wages, and it was a really dark period. I don't say this is some sort of rags-to-riches story, but it was a bit of a defining moment, because at that point we did have a decision to make collectively. Could they just go back to working on the tools as electricians? Because they were both very good at what they did. They could easily command 60, 70 grand a year, which isn't too shoddy for where we live in the north of England. You know, that's sort of largely considered a half-decent salary. But we just thought that there's no way that we had been through everything that we had been through at that point not to make a real success of things. And Yeah, that was a turning point. But then you mentioned about the property education. When I got, in hindsight, it was like the stars were all aligning, although it definitely didn't feel like that at the time. I got a call when I was on the back end of my second consecutive maternity leave, which is a story in its own right, and was told I was getting made redundant. The contract, they'd lost the contract, that everyone was getting finished. And I actually used every last penny of that redundancy money, which was all we had. We didn't have any savings. We were your sort of stereotypical middle class at this point. We were getting ourselves back on the feet after 2016. This was 2018. This was only 3 years ago. But we had a half decent house and half decent cars and a couple of holidays a year, but we had very little in the bank. We lived to our means. So when I got this redundancy money, it was no huge amount. It's about £7,000. That's what funded our education, and yeah, it was undoubtedly the best thing that we've ever done. I After completing the training, we bought two properties within 4 days. No money down. We didn't have any money, which obviously you do need money, just not your own money. And I kind of realized very early on how easy it was to leverage finance, which is really my main sort of job role, I suppose, within the business, because up until that point, I had very limiting beliefs around money, and I used to listen to the mainstream media. I would listen to family members, some well-intentioned, some otherwise. And I was sort of almost being judged by the limitations or experiences of other people. But the reality was, and without sounding horrible, the people in my life at that point weren't particularly people I'd want to aspire to in terms of their business decisions or their financial situation. So whilst you can learn from everybody, my network was very, very limited at that point, and I truly believed that there wasn't any money out there, and if there was, certainly no one was going to give it to someone like me. So one of the reasons I was sort of gravitated towards this particular property company was because it was as much about the mindset as the property strategies, and
Absolutely.
I'm actually a lot more interested in talking about the personal journey and the learnings and the mindset side of it, because something I'm hugely passionate about is that your business can only grow at the same extent that you do. And my reality was 3 years ago, I could hardly leave the house. I was crippled with anxiety. I was having panic attacks all the time. And if you'd have said to me that 3 years later we'd have a multi-million pound portfolio, and I'm speaking on the stage with the likes of Ed Milet, and I've launched a podcast that's attracted some of the most phenomenal speakers across the world. I've had like Mark Victor Hansen, who wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and like Joe Foster, the founder of Reebok. It's been an incredible journey.
Just want to drill down into one like throwaway comment you made there. You bought two properties in your first 4 days of property investing. That's amazing. Talk us through that. How did you achieve that?
Well, they were actually online as well. They were there for all to see, and it was Mark. It's a proverbial wee. Mark's a lot more operational than I am. So in the same way that you're not very good with dates, I'm quite similar with some of the numbers with our property deals, which has got me into trouble in the past because I don't tend to deal with it. But Mark had been to view this property, and he just made some sort of a remark about there was another property in the street and they were on with the same agent. And I just had a little bit of an epiphany. I was like, could it be the same seller? And it had not crossed Mark's mind, and it clearly hadn't crossed the minds of all the other people that went to view this property. And we spoke to the estate agent, and it was the same seller, and they were open to doing a deal. They didn't make sense buying them individually, but we were able to get quite a significant saving by buying both of them together. And that was it, really. We did, I think for one of them, we did a joint venture with somebody that we'd done the training with, who was a fighter pilot overseas. I think he lived out in Qatar at the time. And he was sort of typical avatar of someone who's cash rich and time poor. And although he wanted to establish his own property journey, he was very limited in what he could do in terms of sourcing properties or project managing or all the other sort of moving parts that we know about. So he was quite happy to be the funder, and we were the boots on the ground, the sweat equity. So we did all the legwork, and that's how we funded one of the properties. And I think The other property, we leveraged money. I think we raised some finance from people we know, from we knew for the deposit. And I think, if I'm being brutally honest, I think we drew down money from a credit card to pay for the refurb at the time, which, although some people might deem that a risky strategy, I think we paid 3% for doing that for a property that was going to net us 20 grand profit. And it got the cogs going in terms of other ways that we could raise finance. And whilst I'm not advocating other people do this, I do have a tendency to go all in, the caveat being we do know what we're doing. We're surrounded by people who are further down the path that we want to travel as well. So we're mitigating a lot of this risk. But that being said, we did make the decision to sell our family home and move into a rental. And that freed up, I think it was about 150 grand in equity. And we put that into our business, which has undoubtedly helped to accelerate us to the point we're at now. And when I say putting into the business, I don't necessarily mean into specific property deals, but into our education, into our networks, onboarding new staff, updating systems and processes. So it's it was a catalyst for us to really springboard.
Hearing the objections, I want to voice some of the thoughts that I think some people would have, and then perhaps you and I can respond to them. So the first one is, remind me, how much did you pay for your first period of education? Did you do a year's course? Am I right, or was it what was it, and how much?
Yeah, it was a 4-day intensive. And I think it was either 3,000 or £3,500 per person at that time.
Yeah.
So after your 4 days of training, that was it. That wasn't it. You were then able to access weekly Zoom calls every Wednesday. And there would be periodic get-togethers and things like that as well. But for all intents and purposes, the money was for the 4-day intensive. The great thing about having access to the Zoom support and what have you afterwards was just because you don't know what you don't know. And it's not really until you start actually transacting and having difficulties with investors or estate agents or brokers or solicitors or builders or, you know, like I say, any of the moving, you know, we spin a lot of plates, don't we? So it's not really until you're entrenched in all of that that you necessarily have the questions. So it was great to have that follow-up support for sure.
Absolutely. £3,000. Was that 2016, did you say? Is that the same price now, do you know, or has that gone up?
2018 that was. No, 2016 is when we nearly lost electrical business.
Ah, okay.
I couldn't tell you, to be honest.
No. Regardless, it's £6,000 then, presumably, for the two of you, yourself and Mark, yeah? Is that what you invested?
Yeah, £6,000-£7,000, I think it was. It might have been three and a half. I think it might have been three plus that.
Okay. The reason I ask is a lot of people might be sat there thinking, wow, that's a lot of money for 4 days plus a few Zoom calls. It's really interesting. People seem to place a much lower value on online stuff, but it's still the same advice. It's still the same learning that you can get from it. But everyone in that room was committed to the tune of £3,500. And I think that is often the value. Obviously, the education's really valuable, but you were instantly in a community of people who were taking action, because people don't spend £3,500 if they're maybe someday thinking about doing something. They're committed to doing it. And case in point, you met your JV partner there, the fighter pilot. He wanted to do deals. You knew he wanted to do deals. You knew him. Presumably there was a bit of know, like, and trust going on there during the 4 days and afterwards. And so you were able to do a JV. I've heard so many people say, why would you pay for education when you can get so much online? You can join this Facebook group, you can go to this free networking event. But I don't know what your take on it, Ellie, is, but you get a lot of people who aren't committed at those events. And I'm not saying you can't learn from them, but it's different to joining a community of action takers. What's your perspective on that?
You know what? I used to be a lot more diplomatic on this, Frank. But you know what?
I can't imagine you ever being diplomatic, Ellie. You call a spade, don't you?
Well, I do. And you know what? You get what you pay for. I mean, was it Warren Buffett said that the best investment you can ever make is in yourself? Well, look, I'm not here. I can be quite objective about this. I am not a mentor and I'm not a trainer myself. Hmm. But I tell you what, that investment was absolutely priceless. So to put this into context, yeah, what would we pay? £7,000. Now, within those 4 days, and I appreciate, you know, that this isn't money in the bank because we have a process that we have to go through with property, but those two properties would have netted us £40,000. So there's your return on investment. And of course, with any trainer or anything you're going to spend money on, any course, you need to do your own due diligence. You need to make sure that you resonate with that person. Unfortunately, property does have a bad reputation, and there is unscrupulous people in our sector, like there are in every sector. And that's why relationships are my highest form of currency. And a really
Ellie, when you said there are unscrupulous people in this industry, like, I thought you were going to start naming people. I was like, whoa. let's not throw mud and open ourselves up to lawsuits. Yeah, no, but you were saying that, like in any industry, I agree. I think for some reason, it's probably because of the get rich quick aura about it. It seems to attract a high proportion of unscrupulous people. It's a real shame. But yeah, I agree with your warning for sure.
But with regards to the point about you can learn it online, well, you know, if that's people's opinions, then by all means, you go and do that. Crack on. Let's see where you are in 10 years and let's compare it to where I am, because that is absolutely not my philosophy at all. One other point, Frank, you know, you mentioned that people who do make that financial investment are more likely to take action. Whilst I agree with you to an extent, I think there is, and this is probably one of the reasons that puts me off venturing into the training space, there is also a hell of a lot of people that think that by investing the money, that it's almost going to happen for them. I think people grossly underestimate what it actually takes. And it's easy to go to any kind of training event or personal development seminar and feel really pumped up. You could be listening to some great quality content. But then by the time you get home, the car's broken down, or one of the kids is poorly, the dog's been sick in the carpet, whatever it may be. And suddenly that motivation dwindles. So I find it, I'm quite fascinated by this, because even within that room of 20 people or however many it was that were there when they did that four days training, it's interesting seeing the differences. Some people have just completely fallen off the radar, never to be heard of again. Other people have went out and just done a couple of flips, and that's all they were ever intending to do, or added one or two properties to the portfolios. And then there's other people who have got six-figure businesses, and then you've got people that are working on multi-million pound developments. So I think sometimes you can lead a horse to water. But we definitely live in a culture where everyone wants that instant gratification. And whilst we have, and I'm very proud of what we have achieved within a short space of time, I'm very mindful not to project it as sort of sunshine and unicorns, because it's been bloody hard work. You know, we've lost a billionaire investor as we've had 10 properties going through. We've been screwed over by builders. We've taken massive action. We've done a lot of projects and had a lot of learnings, but we've also had a hell of a lot of challenges on the way.
Mm-hmm. I've lost track of the number of times when someone has said to me, I would do EPP if it wasn't for the fact that it was 5 years, or I'd do EPP if it wasn't so expensive. Like, if we could just do it for 20% of the price, I'd be in. And it's not that they can't afford it. It's not that they can't commit for 5 years. It's that they don't want to. And so what they're actually saying is, I'm not sure I want to commit fully to my success. So can we water down the commitment to a level where I can swallow not taking any action? And it's yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. It doesn't guarantee anything, but some people think it does. Interestingly. Yeah, fascinating. So if we fast forward, that was you in 2018 taking action. So we're only 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. 3 years on, what have you achieved, Ellie? Tell us the highlights.
So our first year was just insane. We did 25 transactions within the first 12 months. Some of those were just literally sourcing properties for investors. We did a lot of assisted sales where we could control properties without actually owning them. We flipped a few properties, and we did portfolio building for our clients as well, where we were buying them and doing the renovation and the project management on their behalf. So yeah, it was quite an intense year. Over the last, I'd say 18 months, we saw a lot of opportunity during lockdown. We made the decision to go quite aggressive on the property front. Our electrical business was in dire straits because all our work comes through sheltered housing and things like that. So we were the first ones off the site, and that work was pretty much suspended for 9 months. So, as well on that point, what a great advert for having multiple streams of income, yeah, you know, because
absolutely.
We launched a fire protection business off of the back of that. And I think that turned over about 800 grand on its first year. So that really came out of the traps flying. But the reality of that was, and this is why I very rarely talk about the figures with things, because the reality of that was, with the profit from that business, just kept our other business afloat. So it was all the more important for us to have the focus on the property side. And whilst there was a lot of trepidation in the market, we again took massive action. And I think we bought 20 properties in 2020, and now we've got our own property portfolio, which is worth over 3 million, which, you know, I appreciate to likes yourself, Frank, and people who have been doing property a lot longer. It's, you know, it might sound like big numbers to the listeners, but actually that's not that difficult to achieve in property. You know, I'm very proud of what we've done so far. But the big opportunities for me and the things I really get excited about are, it's the relationship elements and it's the learning and it's the expansion, because we're constantly testing and measuring, and I'm looking at the amount of legwork and stress, I'll be honest, that's involved in doing what we've done. And there's always a smarter way of working. So we're always trying to streamline things and improve it. And now when I look at the sort of developments that we're appraising, we're looking at the multi-million pound property developments now, and we've got offers going in, and we're going to be scaling up quite significantly. And that's going to be another huge leap again for us. So we will still do our bread and butters, but for example, before we were talking about if we did a flip for 15, 20 grand, we'd be quite happy with that. Whereas we started doing HMOs, we ventured into HMOs, and instead of being able to charge like a £3,000 sourcing fee, we were starting to charge anything between £5,000 and £10,000, depending on the level of discount that we were securing, etc. And then we were taking our project management fee and sometimes a back-end mandate or what have you as well, depending if the deal would allow it. And again, we're like, okay, so that was a transition, that was stepping up. But then we discovered that there was a market for people buying ready-made HMOs. Not everyone, and this is fishing in a different pond to everyone else, because up until that point, we'd been going to your local property networking events. And what I was finding was the people that were there were either, it was full of deal sourcers or one-man bands, you know, brokers, people that are basically touting for business. And the investors that were there to learn a little bit about property. So they're sort of familiar with the lingo, the buy, refurb, refinance, and all of that kind of thing. And that's absolutely not our avatar. Our avatars are people that understand the power of property. They want to put their money to work, and they're sick of getting 0.01% or whatever it is in the bank at the moment. But they've got no interest in learning about it or doing this themselves. And the classic cash rich, time poor. So like we have clients or barristers or consultants or things like that. And they're looking for ready-made investment opportunities. So we now try to work to get our end users for the HMOs. So for all intents and purposes, we're basically flipping them. So we're buying them, we're doing them up, and we're selling them on. We've got the end user lined up before we even start the process. And suddenly, instead of making maybe 15, 20 grand doing that per HMO, you're looking at anything between sort of 80 and 120, probably around 100 grand as a benchmark. So it was almost going through the same process, but just coming at it from a slightly different angle. And that's what I love about property, because the more you do it, the more you realise, you look back at previous deals where you're happy with the profit you were getting. Like, you know, I mentioned about that joint venture in the early days. That was a great deal for us. We needed capital to get started. But I tell you what, the more, you know this better than anyone, Frank, the more times that we actually went through the process and we realised the value we were bringing to the table.
Yeah.
Suddenly, there's no way we were going to do all that and give 50% of our profit to somebody who was doing absolutely nothing other than providing the capital. And when we realised how much money there was out there, you don't want to be given such a big slice of the pie.
The way that you've gone about that, it's a small change, isn't it, to go from charging a fee and making 20 odd grand to providing an armchair service and making 100 grand. But the difference on your bottom line is massive, absolutely massive. without a lot more work. It's just a different mindset and a slightly different structure. And I do applaud you, Ellie, that those results are phenomenal. To do 25 deals in your first 12 months, to buy 20 properties in 2020, when most of the world was saying it's impossible to buy houses. Like, we were delivering leaflets and people were stopping our leaflet deliverers saying, you shouldn't be delivering these. A, you're not allowed to deliver leaflets, and B, you're not allowed to buy houses anyway. So what are you bothering for? Both of which were completely incorrect. it's fascinating. And you say it's a small number of deals. I think 20 in the middle of a pandemic is unbelievably active. And I love that you're not stopping there. You're not just going to repeat that year a few times. You're moving onwards and upwards, which is awesome. And is the reason I invited you on, Ellie. I admire the journey that you and Mark have been on. You've had your backs against the wall. You've had it really tough. You've been scrapping to keep your commitments, and now you're seeing the benefits of all the hard work in between and the commitments you've made. It's phenomenal to hear. If you had to give some advice to someone in a similar situation, I think a lot of people will be in this situation, Ellie. Let me create an image for you. Someone who was probably in a decent job in 2019, maybe earning 50, 100 grand. They've lost their job now, or they're still on the remnants of furlough, and they're thinking they're probably going to lose it. Might have a bit of money in the bank, 30 grand, 50 grand. What would you, obviously your first answer is going to be get in touch with EPP, but what would you recommend that person do if they're thinking about property? If they're listening to you now and they're thinking, I'm willing to work hard for the next 3-5 years, what would your advice be to them?
On a serious note, Frank, it really would be to get educated. It would be to find someone, whether it's Ethical Property Partners, you know, somebody who you really... not just resonate with in terms of the content, but for me it's very important that they're aligned with your values as well. Because it really truly is the best investment you could ever make. Because okay, yes, you do need the capital for your training, but it doesn't matter if you've got 50 grand, 100 grand or 500 grand in your bank, because if you're planning to go aggressive with property, that money will soon go. And actually, it was getting the education around raising the finance and how to put myself out there in social media there are no words for not just the value that that's brought to my life in terms of the relationships, but the amount of finance that we've raised off the back of it. And I know that there'll be people listening to this and they'll be thinking, well, okay, Ellie, that's okay for you, but I would rather stick pins in my eyes and go out there and build a personal brand. And trust me when I say I absolutely get it. You know, I get it. That was me 3 years ago. I had no self-confidence. I know how it feels to have absolutely no self-worth. But I can honestly say that whilst Mark's been more operational, my role to the business has been very much around putting myself out there. There's a saying that I always bang on about, Frank, and it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. Because yes, you can build a successful business without a personal brand. I fully accept that. But in my world, it's simple, because the more people who know who you are, the more opportunities that creates for people to do business with you. And it's not just about the raising finance. It's about, you know, we get sent deals, we get sent properties, we get sent land, we get sent all sorts of opportunities through my online presence and through the network that we've built up. That you get opportunities to speak at an events and come on podcasts. And actually, it's quite unusual for me to talk about property. I very much talk about the mindset element of it and that side of it. But even to this day, it surprises me how many people reach out because they gravitate towards your story, or, you know, there's something that you've said that really clicked with them and they actually want to do business with you. So don't be scared to put yourself out there. And also, like for us just now, for example, I said about the HMOs and how we've kind of evolved, but we've just submitted an offer for a street, which is for 24 houses. It's so exciting. And, you know, even now we pay for consultation. I mean, I'm 50 grand in this year, I think already, in terms of my education, personal and professional.
Yeah.
So I'm still very much a mentee and learning, and I think I always will be a lifelong student, Frank.
Me too. I was talking to Vanda, my wife, about our futures actually recently, and she was saying, "Do you think you'll retire?" My honest answer was no. If I'm still doing the odd deal when I'm 80, I'll be over the moon. I went to my nan's funeral on Wednesday 2 days ago. She was 87, and a month ago she was still doing her yoga. She was still walking to the supermarket and catching the bus back. And I just thought to myself, I could still be, if I was as healthy and as with it mentally as she was at 87, I could still be doing a deal a quarter or a couple deals a year. And I think it would keep me young. I really do. And I think you were saying, I can't remember now if it was in this podcast or the one before, but today you've said that Mark was opening his laptop because and you only do that because you're enjoying your work. You know, you're looking forward to it. You're enjoying it more than Desperate Housewives or whatever's on the TV. And I would miss it. You know, I'd almost feel like I was being deprived of work if I couldn't do some deals. And so I think you're describing a passion that really resonates with me. And that being a lifelong learner is part of that. If you're not growing, I think it gets stale and boring really quick. But if you keep growing, it's exciting. It's there are never ending challenges, and when you overcome them, it's really fulfilling.
It's weird because it becomes who you are. And you know, Frank, some of your listeners might resonate, but the majority will probably think I'm crazy. I'm no stranger to overwhelm. I've got three young children, I've got two puppies, we've got three businesses, and we've got, you know, a million and one moving parts, as a lot of us do. But you know what's interesting? We still get challenges. Only last week, we had a £500,000 contract pulled from us with 3 days' notice through our fire protection business. And we had tens of thousands of pounds worth of fire doors ordered and ready to get installed, and all the other complications and things that come with it. But the reason I'm sharing that is because I get more stressed out by the small things. The big challenges, the bigger problems, I seem to come alive. You know, I'm just like, right, brilliant, battle stations. What do we have to do now? Our back's against the wall. Well, we knew we were too dependent on the one client. This is exactly why we need to be more diverse. And let's go make these contacts and do things that we should have in reality done months before, but we became complacent. We were a bit like you were in the early days when you had multiple properties and you were financially free and you were comfortable enough to not really need to do much, but you still had that kind of burning desire ultimately to do more. And I think it can make us a little bit lazy. So I see the big problems as opportunities to grow. It's mastering the little stuff. If someone can help with the little stuff, the million and one little finicky things, that tends to be what derails me, I've got to say.
Fascinating, Ellie. It's so lovely to chat to you. Really great to have had you on the podcast. If people want to reach out, if people want to follow you, get in touch, what's the best way for them to do that?
I'm all over social media, so LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, the podcast On a Mission podcast, and the Power of Property podcast, and we also have a YouTube channel as well, so not hard to find.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to chat, and I look forward to seeing you next week in our mastermind meeting, but also to watching and sharing your success with you as you and Mark progress onwards and upwards. Thanks so much, Ellie.
Thank you, Frank. It's been a pleasure.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.